Working Cows Podcast, Episode 8.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This episode of the Working Cows Podcast is brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. They understand the needs of ranchers and farmers, whether you need to take care of your livestock, horses, or even building supplies. They have everything you need to work your cows, whether that be the chute you work them through, the water you bring them to, or the tools you use to make them go up that chute a little bit faster. So check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. This episode is also brought to you by ChrisWilliamsAudio.com. If you're a musician, podcaster, or filmmaker, making your product sound great is crucial. Don't settle for audio that's less than professional. No matter what type of audio service you need, Chris Williams and his team have got you covered. Head on over to ChrisWilliamsAudio.com for all your audio production needs. My guest today on the Working Cows Podcast is Fernando Falamir. Fernando is a rancher from the Chihuahuan Desert area of Mexico. He is a fifth-generation producer. From their website, which will be mentioned in the show and also linked at the show notes page, workingcows.net/8, they state that their personal management goal is to stop desertification in the Chihuahuan Desert ecosystem by maximizing grass production to its fullest potential at a minimal cost. This is achieved by increasing ground cover, utilizing well-adapted cattle as our primary tool of restoration, while also making a profitable business that works in sync with nature. Fernando, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast. I would like to ask you just to take a little bit of time to introduce yourself and kind of the ranch that you're on and some of the things that you're doing there.
Hi, thanks, Clay. Thanks for inviting me to talk on your podcast. My name is Fernando Falamir. I manage Rancho Santa Maria in Chihuahua, Mexico. I studied in Boulder, Colorado as a biogeochemist and somehow ended up being a rancher. So there goes all that. Like great university work. I'm managing my family's ranch that's been over, well, it's been at the family ranch since the 1800s. So I'm the fifth generation, raising the sixth. We are in Chihuahua, which is part of the Chihuahua Desert. I'm managing 20,000 acres, and I have over 400 mother cows and a total of 600 plus animals, including bulls and newborns and all that. So in terms of my stocking rate, I'm more than double, almost three times the regional average, and it's only with 10 inches of rain. So it's not a whole lot. And the way we've accomplished this is by managing holistically and throwing a little bit of our own management style in regards to what we need to do to manage here in our environment. It's very challenging to managing where we are. Just because we get 10 inches of rain doesn't mean that it rains 10 inches. We might get 2 or 3 inches a year and then go 2 years on the drought. And on the fourth year, we can get 15 inches in 1 week and then it won't rain for another year and a half. So this really pushed us to be very flexible. By being flexible, then you have to break a lot of paradigms, you know, that common beliefs that we shouldn't be doing, that we are.
Well, it's right up our alley. Right up our alley here at the Working Cows Podcast. The show opener says we are here to give producers a platform to share paradigm challenging practices. So I'm glad that we were able to connect, and I look forward to diving into a little bit more of the history of the ranch itself. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, like I said, it's been in the family for a long time, but it wasn't always managed properly. It's been over-abused for 150-plus years, overgrazed, really neglected. And from the stories from my old cowboys, well, they all say that, oh, it's because he hasn't rained as much like it used to, and, you know, the same story over and over again. But in reality is that we stopped managing as we should have. The truth is that most people that own land are not the ones that should be managing it. And that's just a sad story. I've inherited all the problems from my forefathers and their negligence and mistakes. But I also inherited some of their old wisdom and in their mistakes. Well, that's something that it's very beneficial for me because now I know what didn't work.
Sure.
Yeah, so when my father took over the ranch from my grandfather after he passed away in 2004, that's when things really changed. We had 15,000 acres, one pasture, and no water. And we had 40 wild cows and 40 wild donkeys running all over the place. So you can imagine there was no grass.
Yeah.
So the first challenge for him was, well, how do you get rid of all those wild animals? And my father is pretty smart, and he set up a couple of traps on certain water holes, and finally we got rid of all the animals that you cannot manage. So that was the first thing, is remove overgrazing and start managing land properly. The second thing that we focused on was water infrastructure. Here, rain is very erratic, and you cannot depend on stock dams. They will just go dry before you can even get to use them. So we have invested in over 20 miles of high-density polypipe, and we have over 30 miles of electric fencing. So out of that whole chunk of land, we started dividing. We have 18 pastures ranging from 2,000 acres down to 120 acres. Why the difference in changes of pasture? Because, well, it's some of the pastures have been degraded for so long that really they're not productive. And our management is telling us to focus on the whole piece of land, but you cannot do that financially. You will just go broke if you try to build 200 miles of electric fencing. No, I have the time to do it, and I don't see a purpose. You cannot make a pasture where there's no grass.
Sure.
So in terms of our grass productivity, we have about one-third of the ranch that is still pretty unproductive. We would need about 80 acres per cow in order to keep up in those areas. So it's pretty barren.
Yeah.
On the other side, the one-third of our land, another third of it, we have made it so productive that it can handle our entire herd almost 80% of the year.
Hmm.
And then the other third, it's pretty broken. It's high mountains with a lot of rocks, terrain that people say, oh, you shouldn't put your cows out there because it's pretty hard on them. Yeah, that's a whole total lie. If you push them, they will go eat to the amazing places that you couldn't even walk up.
Hmm.
So that's the layout of the land. So that's why it's taken us a long time to get the grass growing. And we started basically from zero. That's the truth of things.
Do you think that in time, some of that other unproductive third of the ranch will come back?
Yes, eventually it will. But once you lost your fertile topsoil, I mean, you're starting from negative numbers. There's no seed bank. Anything that lands on the soil just gets washed away. Even though you push your cattle with a high density and break up the soil crust, the erosion is so high that everything is washed away. And we do see a lot of progress. In a couple of my fences in those pastures, they've been silting up almost the entire height of the electric fence up to my knee each year. So we have to go back and raise the fences so that they're still useful.
Is that like a dust is blowing across? Or
no, it's from water.
Okay.
So that's part of our management to avoid that is we always try to keep enough ground cover to retain water and then to stop soil erosion any further.
Sure.
So our rule of thumb is use high animal density as our tool. Cattle are our primary tool to restoring the land. And well, as any tool, it can also be mismanaged. It's a sort of two edges. This is what people have a lot of struggle understanding is that cattle aren't bad. We are. We mismanage and our tool gets blamed.
Sure. We're doing this interview over the phone right now, which is partly good because I'm very, very filthy from shipping calves today. But if you could see me right now, I'm nodding my head in agreement. Very, very much appreciate what you're sharing with us about cows being the tool to improve the soil improve the health of the land, and that really the management is the question, and we are the ones that are responsible for that management.
Yes, and something I'd like to touch on is that on management itself, there's endless solutions. There's not just a single one. High animal density is just one of them, but you also need to know when to implement those tools and how. And more importantly for people starting is to have a clear goal in mind of what is it that you're trying to achieve. Because even though we're pretty new at this and there's a lot of people starting to do it, there's also a lot of confusion. That's what I try to clarify on my website, and I help people through is to help them avoid costly mistakes.
Sure.
So not only are we using this tool, but we also have to provide this tool with everything that they need so it becomes productive so that we're better off financially. So not only is animal performance, land management, and the financial aspect of the business is just as important. So our key management is to keep all these three things in balance so that we can keep moving forward.
Sure. What led to this paradigm shift for your family?
The biggest paradigm shift, I would say that it happened between my grandfather and my father. And my grandfather had been managing the ranch for all his life. And when my father finished animal science school in Las Cruces, New Mexico, he wanted to come into the ranch and start changing things. And there was a lot of resistance from my grandfather in all aspects. You know, my grandfather was conventional, 100%, keep cows everywhere year round. No rotation. When things got bad, just close your eyes and hope for the best. Give a lot of feed, a lot of hay. So where's your profit margins if you're feeding your cattle? And my dad tried to change all those things by putting the entire herd together. And he ran the first set of problems that there's no infrastructure in place to put the whole herd together. And he couldn't really get through my grandfather. So they ended up fighting. And my dad had to leave the ranch until he passed away. So I think that was the first shift, is wanting to change, and for a particular reason.
Sure. Wanting to change for the purpose of increasing the stocking rate, profitability, all those things, or?
Even just making your life better. You know, back then, my grandfather had 15 cowboys, and they had to chase them day in and day out all night, trying to stop a few. And at the end of the day, you only end up with 20 cows that they could handle. And a bunch of pissed off cowboys and broken horses. Hmm. Even just for sake of making things easier, it's necessary to change.
Sure. Yeah, oftentimes that's the forgotten piece of ranch management, is the people that we are working with, and making sure that the ranch, the ranching operation is an enjoyable place to be employed, in an enjoyable place to work, and some of the stresses that come along with poor management often mean that the ranch won't be such an enjoyable place to work.
Yeah, that's how it should be. You know, I've heard a lot of doctors and lawyers that want to be ranchers, but I haven't heard a rancher saying that he wants to be a lawyer or a doctor.
Yeah, it's a great life.
It's a great life. But you need to make it easy for your animals, for your land, and for yourself even. And I think that's the hardest part, is wanting to change, even if it's just for the sake of change. Now, in changing, you can improve your stocking rate, have prettier animals, better resistant animals, even something to brag about. But without a need to change, nothing's going to happen. And if you try, you're only going to see the negative aspects of changing. You'll make excuses of why not to do things instead of wanting to do them.
Sure.
But I think that's the most important thing that you have to take, is wanting to change.
Gotcha. We're talking today with Fernando Falamir of the Santa Maria Ranch in Chihuahua, Mexico. We're going to take just a minute and thank our sponsors, and then we will come back and continue our conversation. This episode has been brought to you in part by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. This episode is also brought to you by chriswilliamsaudio.com. If you're a musician, podcaster, or filmmaker, making your product sound great is crucial. Don't settle for audio that's less than professional. No matter what type of audio service you need, Chris Williams and his team have got you covered. Head on over to chriswilliamsaudio.com for all your audio production needs. All right, we're back with Fernando Falamir of the Santa Maria Ranch in Chihuahua, Mexico. We've been talking about how they have been through some shifts in the ranch operation that he is a part of with his father. And I would like to hear a little bit more about some of what you're doing that's different from your neighbors that allows you to basically triple the regional average stocking rate. What are you using some banked grass for those longer dry periods?
I forgot to mention you. I do not supplement my cattle anything, not even a single bale of hay throughout the year, even on the worst of times. The only thing we give them is salt and minerals. And the reason we do that is for, first, to push our animal genetics to become adaptive to our environment, but also to keep business as mostly profitable as we can. But it also forces you to become a better grass manager. And that's the name of the game, is manage your grass. And we do this several different ways. Like I said, we live in a very unpredictable environment, so there's not a single way of doing this. And when you find out the right answer, it's just not going to work next year. So I focus my management, I split it into three phases, mostly, which is my summer grazing, and that I focus only on my most productive pastures. Reason being, because here in the desert, when it does rain, the grass growth is so fast that if you don't eat it within 30 or 40 days, it already becomes too tough for cattle to digest. Mm. And it becomes unpalatable. And this is where you start running into problems, because you will grow a lot of grass very quickly, but the quality is not there. So you will suffer in animal performance. Therefore, I focus summer grazing into most productive pastures. If I have to skip pastures to give preference to some others, I will do that. And also allows me to give longer recovery period in those areas where it's the most degraded, or that it's even more brittle. So my rocky pastures, or where I have no soil, I'll just let that rest all summer. And then coming fall, I take advantage of everything. So the way I adjust my grazing is I just extend my number of pastures. So I've only used 30% during the summer of my pastures. So in the fall, I will give one rotation throughout the entire property and try to ration the feed that I have. So already from summer, I already started working on my drought pastures just by letting them rest longer. And from there onward, it's just grass management, but always keeping an eye on animal performance. There's no point of having a lot of grass if your cows are underperforming.
Sure.
That's how we focus from there onward the rest of the year, is trying to be at the right place at the right time for the right reason. If we see a spurt of growth somewhere at the far end of our pasture, we will just keep the entire rotation and go to where we have to be. So the name of the game is being flexible 100% in all your pasture management.
Yep. Yep. Every time we talk about these management practices, no matter what they are, it always comes down to knowing your herd, knowing your land, knowing your climate, and being able to adapt when things change. Not if, because we know, as you said, you might figure it out one year. The next year is going to be totally different. But part of managing is figuring out what the situation you are presented with is this year, and how the cows are responding, and how you can make better use of the resources that are available that year, because they're not the same resources that were available last year.
Yes, that's exactly right. You know, when I first came to the ranch, my father put a lot of effort into educating me, and this is where my real career started. I call it my PhD in cattle and ranch management. he sent me, first of all, to see a lot of ranches in the area, a lot of people that we knew that were doing things differently. He made me read a holistic management book by Alan Savory, front and backwards, and then he would ask me questions about it later during dinner. And then he gave me the opportunity to go to Africa and spend some time with Ian Mitchell. I also went to the Savory Institute in Zimbabwe. And during that trip, you know, I spent 2 weeks over there learning all these wonderful things. And on my flight back, you know, a 25-hour flight, I had all the time in the world to plan my entire year's grazing. I did my grazing chart. I had it all figured out on that 25-hour plane ride. As soon as I arrived to the ranch, it didn't rain the whole year. And pretty soon I was throwing all my charts away. So there's all this knowledge is the same. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. It works. The problem is nobody tells you how to do it in your own land. And it's a skill that only knowledge and time and by making mistakes will you be able to get there. And we made our mistakes, but there's nothing wrong in making mistakes. It's owning up to them and never make them again.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Being able to admit that you're wrong is an important quality, I think, in life in general, but especially in ranching. What kind of cattle do you run? Just satisfy my curiosity.
Yeah, mostly Beefmasters. I got some from Lassiter in Colorado and also from here in Chihuahua. We have a friend that has some very nice Beefmasters. We like them for the desert climate because they're resilient. And in times when it does rain a lot, they can hold up to the seas. And we're really, really happy with them.
Sure.
In terms of our animal genetics, what we're trying to do now is to lower the frame size of our animals. You know, those Colorado Beefmasters are not going to do too well in a place where there's not enough grass. So that was part of our learning curve. It's, you have to have grass-fed animals with the frame size that are adapted to your environment. So there's a lot of things involved in your ranch management, and I think this is the most overlooked part because we all want animal genetics, and we go to this great breeders that they want to sell you their genetics. But at the end of the day, the best animals are the ones that are able to breed in your own, under your own management. That's very important. So we bought these animals and we've been lowering their frame size. I keep all my bulls. I grow my own bulls. Now, like I said, I'm 100% flexible, so it doesn't mean that I'll do this forever. If I see a neighbor that has some nice Beefmasters, I will, okay, maybe change some of the genetics and add bring something from outside. But this has really allowed us to maximize the potential of our genetics. I breed my chasers. Most of them get bred at 14 or 15 months of age because they're with the bulls year-round. I don't pull my bulls. And I don't see any problems them calving, and they get pregnant right away. By the time everybody else is just releasing the bulls with the heifers, I already have my first offspring. So that's kind of a big paradigm shift is, oh, you have to let your heifers grow before you breed them. But nature doesn't do that. Look at all your wild herds. There's present there year-round, and the ones that are more adapted to survive will breed and eventually outnumber the underperformers. So you have to allow time for those adapted animals to really succeed and to identify them. That's another piece. You cannot just have the cows wild. You have to keep good notes and be always observant of which ones are outperforming the rest.
Sure. So you're managing and you're culling some out of the herd that just don't fit because of frame size or some of those things?
My first condition is if they're able to breed, first of all. So if I have a large animal, but every year she gives me a calf, she stays. Only the ones are not able to perform. Now, by mere coincidence, I've noticed that the shorter frame animals tend to do that better.
Sure.
So, but I don't go out with a ruler and start measuring all the cows. No, it's first their productivity.
Gotcha. How are you managing the marketing aspect of your calves that are born? Or I guess maybe the first question is, what's your calving season?
This is a very big big question for almost everybody, because we all want a magic answer, right? Well, here in when you're managing an unpredictable environment, and this is an argument that I had with my father for a long time, is how you know what the right timing for calving is when you don't know if it's going to rain or not. Sometimes I may get a weird spring storm and the ranch will be more beautiful than in the summer. So are you still going to do summer calving? I mean, statistically, you probably should, but during certain circumstances, that's not the most advantageous time to calve. Before I went to year-round bulling, we had a control calving, and it was geared towards midsummer to early fall, green pasture calving. And we had a good, we had a very good years, but we were very susceptible to droughts. So as soon as it didn't rain well, then it wasn't a good year. And this is where we had another paradigm shift. Do we want to continue doing control calving or not? And it didn't happen until it was a very bad year. And I knew we were going to have a horrible calving season if I didn't keep the bulls longer. And that's when you have to be flexible. It's a business at the end of the day. So we decided to leave the bulls out. And surprisingly enough, that year we only had 6 inches of rain. So about 70% of our annual average. And we got 85% calving rate. So we had to change in order to try new things.
Sure.
Now that I've left the bulls out, we've been doing this for 3 years, and I've collected individual cow records of their calving dates and how long it takes them for them to get pregnant. It is advantageous to have them calving during the green pasture calving. But I also see a lot of the good cows that calve at the wrong time of year, that we think it's the wrong time of year. I see them not struggle either. So at the end of the day, I think the most important factor in that is how well adapted are your animals to your environment. So the better adapted they are, the less relevant that becomes, because they can outperform almost year-round. And the less adapted they are, well, the more you have to help them and control the calving in green pasture, times more helpful for them to reconceive. Am I getting myself explained?
Yes. No, I understand very well. Thank you for that. How do you market those calves then? Because you're calving year round essentially.
I just wean them as they start getting ready, either as feeders, and then usually they get exported or sell locally. And then cows, well, the ones that are not able to breed, they go straight to slaughter, and that's pretty much it.
I see. Well, I appreciate your time very much today. I have a couple of kind of closing questions, if you don't mind.
Sure.
What is your graze period, or how long are your cows on one patch of grass during the growing season?
It all depends. Depends on how fast my grass is growing, the size of the pasture, and more importantly, what the cows are eating. Every time I manage my rotation, I'm looking at three things: how much grass is ahead of me, what the cows are eating, and how much I'm leaving behind. How much I'm leaving behind is the more important one, because I don't know if it's going to rain again or not. So I always have to keep that in mind. For the most part, during the summer, I use my smaller pastures. They range from 120 acres all the way to 500 to 1,000 acres. And they would stay anywhere from 3 days up to a whole week. If there's a lot of grass that they did not eat, I would just keep them there longer and just remove a pasture out of the rotation to keep that vegetative growth in optimal conditions. And that really gives me an edge in animal performance, because I'm not letting all that excessive growth go stale and the cows are eating the best that they can.
Very good.
So it's always, there's not a magic answer here for any of that. You just have to be out there and observe, see what's happening, and don't be afraid to try new things.
Sure. Have you noticed that they will find things to eat that you or maybe your neighbors don't think that they will eat? You were talking about some rocky places that you put them in, I think, in the fall. Have you found them finding things to eat and things to get by on out there?
Yes, all the time. I get surprised. I don't know if most of the listeners know this, but down here there's a lot of prickly pear. One time in spring, there was a nice little rain and a lot of prickly pear starting coming out, and those cows were on it. And what's wrong with them? Why are you eating this? And that's something that we take into account in our management. It's take advantage of seasonal sprouts of growth, because those are your natural supplements that will help you digest that old stale grass that you have. So because I'm leaving grass behind in every pasture even from the summer, if I see something like that happening, I take full advantage of it. So this was a weird case of them eating cactus and prickly pear, but usually I get a lot of forbs, mesquite vines, and a lot of shrubs that otherwise they wouldn't eat. But for certain periods of the year, they do eat them, and you have to maximize those. So take advantage of any seasonal sprout of growth.
Well, Fernando, I so much appreciate your time today, and definitely would enjoy an opportunity to get you back on. I just have one last question, and that is, you mentioned Alan Savory and Ian Mitchell. Are there other people that you would recommend people look into as far as learning from, or are there specific books by either of those individuals that you would recommend people looking at?
Yeah, everyone you can, even if it's your neighbor. It doesn't have to be someone famous. But I've listened to Ian Mitchell, Alan Savory, Andrea Bosson. He's really one of my favorites. He started the whole rational gazing. Also, Pinheiro. He's a Brazilian. He does PRV, which means, I don't know how you say it in English, rational gazing Bosson. So he's a student of Andrea Bosson. Mm. And there are many others, even just the weirdest books you can find. You might find something helpful that you haven't thought of before.
Yes. Yep. Be a learner. I really appreciate your humility, learn from your neighbors, be a learner, and that's an important piece in the...
Even if it's the wrong ideas, it's worth knowing that they will not work, but it's good to see them in practice.
Letting your neighbor make a mistake in your place is a good way to save a lot of money sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah, so just be humble about it and don't be afraid to ask.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, I do appreciate your humility and your wisdom and you coming on and sharing with us today. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. And if you have more questions, please visit our site in Facebook, which is Santa Maria Cattle Company. And the same is for our website, santamariacattlecompany.com. And we can answer any questions that you have or comments, or if you want to argue, just to argue them. I'm all ears.
Very good. All of that will be linked at the show notes page, which will be workingcows.net/8, workingcows.net/8. All of those resources that were mentioned will be linked there. So if you want to go and check out Fernando's website or the Facebook page, those things will be linked there. So check out workingcows.net/8 for all that information. Fernando, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Clay.
I really would encourage you to check out their website, santamariacattlecompany.com, as well as like their Facebook page. Specifically, their website has great articles and a really good summary of their philosophy and some of the other things that we didn't have time to go into in depth here with Fernando today. There's articles on controlled calving versus open calving and the ideal size of a pasture. So different things like that that we didn't have time to get into today, maybe some things that will be more in-depth conversations with Fernando in the future. I would encourage you to check out their website at santamariacattlecompany.com. I haven't quite decided what direction I'm going to go with the next few episodes. I've got a few different interviews lined up. I'm really excited about things that I will share with you in the future when I have decided how I'm going to go about releasing them. But I promise you the next few episodes of the Working Cows Podcast will be worth your time. So please tune in next week to the Working Cows Podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.